Well, as you know, before the feast, maybe a month or so, I had the opportunity to give a sermon, and I realized it was the first time I gave it here, first time I gave the sermon, and I realized, wow, if I take the full amount of time for the sermon as I was progressing, we're going to be here, we're going to have a Joel Waterhouse time, you know. We don't want that, right? So nevertheless, I was able to find a spot just to stop and then make it a two-part sermon. I've since given it in Dallas and Fort Worth and Lawton, and I just tell them up front, this is going to be a two-part sermon. Now, my wife is not here. Her back is bothering me, and she didn't want to make this long drive over at home. But she threatens me. She says, sweetheart, she says, you can't give two-part sermons that are like 3 months apart. She said, it doesn't work that well. I said, well, what I should have done is just ended the sermon when I did and said nothing, then come back and give the second part. Everybody will think it's a brand new sermon, right? But anyway, I thought I'd pass it on to you that she felt it wasn't wise for me to give a split sermon that's 3 months apart. And I appreciate that. I can really understand that. Let me give a very quick review of what we covered the first time. The subject matter, the title was Wisdom in Matters of Friendship. And we discussed the fact of being social creatures, living in on an inhabited planet. It's hard not to be around people, whether it be at work, school, the neighborhood, at church, etc. And we talked about how Paul said, walk in wisdom towards those who are outside, redeeming the time, that we ought to know how to conduct ourselves, letting our speech always be with grace, seasoned with salt, that you may know how you ought to answer each one. It was more directly pointed to those who were non-believers back in Paul's time, but in principle applies to anybody, whether you're a non-believer or a church member. So then we got into the subject, and we looked at, number one, the value of a good friend. We discussed that element. And one of the first items was a friend is someone who can be a source of comfort. We saw the scriptures dealing with that. Proverbs 17 said it both in good times and in bad times. A friend is someone who can be a source of good counsel. We digested that a little bit during the sermon. And then we moved on to advice on the selection of friends. You know, the selection of friends under wisdom in matters of friendship. And we discussed people you do not want as friends. We discussed gossips, Proverbs 20:19, what is said about that, not having them as friends. Short-tempered, and those given to violence, both went together. We discussed that. Those given to drinking and gluttony, I took a little more time with that one because I had a personal story that many of you may remember about the young lad who got involved with three other boys at school, and they'd get a six-pack of beer and think it was cool to drive around in his buddy's car and each have a beer. And his dad found out about it, tried to convince him that that's not a wise thing to do. He said, well, Dad, we're not getting into trouble. We're not doing any harm. And of course, his dad says, well, you know, first of all, it's illegal. And bad things can happen when you're drinking and driving. And he called me and talked with me about it. And I just moved in the area. We set up a time to get together and have dinner so I could meet his son and build some type of rapport. And he was going to call me when he got back from being out of town on his job. But before he got back, he called me and let me know his son had died. It was killed in an automobile accident. Actually, most of you who were here, I'm sure, remember that story. And the police said that their educated guess and their diagnosis is that the driver, they had a six-pack, they each had one, and there were two to split, and the driver had one, was passing it over the back seat, over the seat to the person in the back, and his hand moved a little bit, and the car hit a concrete abutment on a very narrow road, killed the member's son who was in the passenger seat front, killed the guy behind him, and then the driver and the guy behind him survived. Evidently, it was that side, the passenger side of the car, that took the brunt of hitting the abutment. And, of course, obviously the family was devastated, which is very understandable. And, just goes back to the commandment, honoring your father and mother, first commandment with promise, that your days may be long, that you may live. And if he had just listened to his father, he'd probably be alive today and have his own kids, maybe a grandchild or two by this time. So it was very sad, and our selections of friends is extremely important, extremely important. We looked about those given to change, not change for good, change at repentance, repenting and changing for better, but those who are just given to change, changing all the time, going with the fad, et cetera, et cetera. Digested that. Liars and those untrustworthy and those inconsiderate, we digested that. And then we went to the next category under advice for selection of friends, the sort of friends you want. And we discussed wisdom, those who display wisdom. I talked about Jackie Collins, a very close friend of mine who seemed to have a lot of wisdom for the age that he was, junior high and freshman in high school, and we got along really well, and it was very enjoyable. Proverbs 13:20, be with the wise and become wise, be with the evil and become evil. It's a principle. And so you want to be selecting the best of your ability, someone who has a little bit of common sense, a little bit of wisdom. I mentioned Mr. Armstrong in his autobiography. I heard him actually tell this story, but in his autobiography, he talked about the people he tried to hang around with as he was growing up, and especially when he was getting into business. And he said he tried to be around people who were successful so he could learn the traits from people like that and gain their wisdom. So there's wisdom in choosing people who have wisdom to hang around. And then, of course, 1 Corinthians 15:33, we concluded with in the sermon, first sermon, is tells us that a corrupting influence will corrupt you, just to paraphrase it. So what I want to do now is begin the second part of the sermon, and we should be able to finish in plenty of time. And that is advice on maintaining good friendships. Advice on maintaining good friendships. So first of all, things to avoid which can disrupt a good friendship. Okay, under the category of maintaining good friendships. Number one, things to avoid which can disrupt a good friendship. Don't repeat everything you hear. I think that's somewhat common sense. Don't repeat everything that you might hear. Some might think of what we discussed in the first sermon about gossips, right? About gossips. Proverbs 17. Let me get to where I need to be in my notes. Proverbs 17 and verse 9, under don't repeat everything you hear, says, he who covers a transgression seeks love. Now, Proverbs 10:12 says he promotes love. So he who covers a transgression, he's not out spreading all of this, even bad news. He covers it. Then it says, but he that repeats a matter separates very friends. In other words, someone who is involved with repeating everything, he does so in such a way that he revives the remembrance of some injury or cause of quarrel, which ought to be considered oblivious. Okay? In oblivion. Not repeating it. Or repeats to some other transgression that he's aware of to somebody else. For love's sake, we cover it rather than spreading it. That specifically is from the JFB commentary. And I think that's quite a good way to put it. Let me read something from Matthew Henry under Proverbs 17:9. He says, the way to preserve peace among relations and neighbors is to make the best of everything. Okay, make the best of everything. Not repeating everything. Making the best of everything. Not to tell others what has been said or done against them when it is not at all necessary to their safety. So somebody says something against, let's say somebody says something to Mr. I say something about Mr. Baker. Okay. wisdom would say, I don't, you know, or let me rephrase that. Someone else says something about Mr. Baker. Wisdom says, I don't need to repeat that. I don't need to repeat. I need to cover what was given. Now, the person who said it should not have said anything either. It should have been covered. Unless it was necessary for that person's safety. Okay? Unless it was necessary for that person's safety. If someone said that they were going to kill Mr. Baker tomorrow, then I feel I should possibly tell him that. Okay? So he that repeats a matter separates friends. He revives the remembrance of some injury that need not be done. We make the best of everything. Number two, avoid senseless arguments. If you want to maintain good friendships, avoid senseless arguments. Notice Proverbs 17 in verse 4. Proverbs 17 in verse 4. It says, the beginning of strife is like releasing water. Therefore, stop contention before a quarrel starts. You nip it in the bud right away. You want to avoid senseless arguments. You see, there is a danger in the beginning of strife. If you can nip it in the bud before it starts, you're better off. There's a danger in the beginning of strife. In other words, one hot word, one peevish reflection, one angry demand, one spiteful contradiction begets another, and then begets another, and then you have a third and a fourth and so on, until it proves to be like water cutting through a dam. You know, if you can get that water stopped, and I experienced this personally in building our home because we had a lot of rain, which really set me back, but I had, you know, the back area just graded really nice, no grass, and it was downhill to a retaining wall. And rains came, and they came a week before my gutters were to be put on the house. Yes, yes. And as the water came off the roof and hit that dirt, as flat as it is, you would think it would just all roll away. But it wasn't totally flat. You couldn't tell it. But the water found the little grooves. And guess what happened? Those little grooves became enormous, deep and wide. So much so, because it rained so much, it got behind my retaining wall and blew it out. So I had to rebuild it. But that's what he's saying here about beginning of strife is as one who lets out water. If you don't stop it, it's just going to cut deeper and wider. And pretty soon, it blows out a wall. In my case, a retaining wall. So just one peevish reflection, one hot word, one angry demand, one spiteful contradiction will beget another and beget another and beget another if you're not careful. So you want to nip it in the bud right away. Stop the strife right away. You know, I think many of you are aware of the Three Gorges Dam. In China, there's great concern. It hasn't gone away. I remember hearing first about it about 5 or 6 years ago, where they found little cracks and a little bit of water seeping. And that is a huge dam. And if it bursts, you know, if it gives way, and the thing is, it can be leaking and leaking, and you think it's okay, but underneath where you can't see it, it's eroding and affecting. If it gives way, everything downstream is gone. And it will have a devastating effect on the country itself, but also on trade with other nations. It's quite frightening if you think about it and happen to live downstream of it in particular. So a little water widens the breach, and then it bears down on all before it, flooding out, potentially harming those before it. So take heed of the first spark of contention and put it out as soon as it appears. Thereby, avoid senseless arguments. Avoid senseless arguments. All it's going to do is cause a very deep rut that can cause greater pain and greater suffering, to say the least. Next, don't meddle in affairs not your own. Don't meddle in affairs not your own. It will help you maintain good friendships. Have you ever gotten involved with an affair that was not your own? Because you're just that type of person who wants to correct everything and make everything right? My dad's been dead many years now, but he was the type of person, as you know, who could talk with anybody. Sometimes to my frustration, because I'd be in a hurry when he's visiting, he'd meet a guy at the grocery store, and he's going on for about a half an hour, and I'm saying, Dad, we've got this appointment. Okay, I'll be right with you. Half an hour later, Dad, we got this. And he was just that type of person. So if there was any type of conflict, he felt he needed to step in and try to resolve it. He didn't know Bill from Joan, but he was going to resolve it. And he got burnt. I'm very familiar with this story, where it's like the police officer goes because of a conflict between two people, husband and wife, let's say, and he gets in to try to resolve it, and then they both turn on him. That's what happened to my dad. He didn't learn the lesson, but that's what happened to him. Oh, my. Proverbs 26 and verse 17. He who passes by and meddles in a quarrel not his own is like one who takes a dog by the ears. Here's a passing dog going by and you grab it by the ears. It's not your own personal dog. You just grab. What's going to happen? He's going to turn and bite you. That's happened with human beings as well. Stories that I'm familiar with. So you don't want to be involved with something that's not involving you. Now, if there's danger involved, then you can call the police, whatever else, as you are able. But more often than not, it has nothing to do with danger as much as you just want to meddle in somebody else's affair. Now, the problem is there are people who love doing that. I think a phrase or expression for these people is they are, anybody think of it? They are busy bodies. They are busy bodies. They want to know everything that is going on in everyone else's business. So Proverbs is very clear on don't grab a passing dog by the ear. So don't meddle in affairs not your own. Next, don't play bad jokes. Now, we all have fun. You know, I'm not saying don't make jokes. And, you know, if it's very close friends, sometimes you'll give and take. And, you know, I'm not saying it should never, ever be done. But I'm saying don't make that a habit. Don't play bad jokes. Proverbs 26. And let's start reading in verse 18. Proverbs 26 and verse 18. Like a madman who throws firebrands, arrows, and death is the man who deceives his neighbor and says, "Oh, I was only joking." You ever had that told? "Oh, I was just teasing. I didn't mean anything by it." Well, did you or didn't you mean anything by it? Sometimes you can get a really good jab or in, and you can tell, "Well, I was just teasing. I was just joking. I was," you know. I'm not saying that that can't happen occasionally with good friends, where you might tease somebody. But it's not a good habit to do that, especially on a regular basis. Let me read something here from Adam Clark. As a man who casts firebrands, arrows, and death, so is the man that deceives his neighbor and says, "Am I not in sport? Oh, I'm just teasing." He says, compare 2 Peter 2:13, sporting themselves with their own deceivings. A lie in jest does mischief in earnest. A lie in jest does mischief in earnest. Such sport, the believer feels, is not convenient. It is the act of a madman playing with deadly implements, with the difference that the madman is not accountable. He's not accountable. So be aware of that. Proverbs 26:20 again says, where no wood is, the fire goes out. So where there is no talebearer, the strife ceases. That goes in hand, by the way, that's number six or five. Don't be a talebearer. Goes along with making bad jokes, potentially lying to somebody. Matter of fact, these next three go together. Don't play bad jokes, don't be a talebearer, and don't be contentious. Good points to remember in maintaining good friendships. Proverbs 26:20 again says, where there is no fire, no wood, the fire goes out, and where there is no talebearer, strife ceases. Now, the talebearer has to be what? Or has to have what? He has to have a receiver, does he not? Normally? So the talebearer and the tale receiver are the agents of discord. Agents of discord. So if none received the slander, the talebearing, if no one received the slander in the first place, it could not be propagated. That's why the church, Mr. Brick, remember way back, has always encouraged people not to listen to somebody who is a gossip and somebody who is a talebearer. And, you know, I've got a friend of mine who, a very close friend, who literally would state if somebody started telling him a story, he says, I don't listen to gossip. And eventually, he never received any gossip. Because if you tell someone, I'm sorry, I don't listen to gossip, do you think they're going to come back to you and tell you gossip in the future? No, you just embarrassed them. You just embarrassed them. So there might be a time when you say, you know what, Mrs. whomever or Mistress whomever who's come to you numerous times, you know, I really don't want to hear the gospel, whether it be true or false. That person probably will not come to you again. So don't be a talebearer, nor a receiver. Nor a receiver. So again, if none received the slander in the first place, it could not be propagated. Let me read this to you from JFB. Where no wood is, there the fire goes out. So where there is no talebearer, the strife ceases. A talebearer or whisperer secretly traduces his neighbor, makes statement with which either he or someone else has invented, reveals what ought not to be told, and tells it to someone to whom especially he ought not, and then repeats the words in a different sense from that which they were originally spoken. It just reminds me of that old game, you know, you tell somebody something and you got 10 people in a circle and you tell them something and then it goes all the way around. By the time it gets back to you, it's totally different. Now, I do realize, okay, because we did that a time or two with our YOU group. I do realize that as you tell something to somebody in their ear, there's going to be somebody in that group who purposely is going to change it, all right? That's just the nature of that animal, the nature of that game. But nevertheless, it does often change, and it is different. Again, that was JFB. And then I want to read something as well from the pulpit commentary. It puts it quite well. It talks about his inflammatory character. He keeps alive quarrels which, but for his vice, would die down for want of fuel. In other words, if he didn't continue to feed it to other people and then they continued to feed it, it would eventually die out because of want of fuel. It is easy to fire the imagination with tales of evil. Not so easy to quench the flames it thus kindles. If the character is odious, let us beware of countenancing it by opening our ears to scandal. Personal gossip has in our day become an offense in the public press. Now, this was written many years ago. Can you imagine what it's like today with the internet? I mean, it is amazing what you can spread and to how many people you can get it to today. But he also goes on to say the same thing. But where there is no receiver, there would be no thieves. If we cannot stop the scoundrel's mouth, we can stop our own ears and let him see in our face that he has no room in our heart. And I think if you start telling something to somebody or receiving something and you just make it very clear by your body actions, your facial expressions, etc., they would get the point that you're really not interested in hearing what is said. And that's a very good point on the maintenance of good friendships, especially if they're gossiping about your friend, which I can give you numerous stories about that from what I've experienced in my 50-plus years in the ministry, where individuals told stories about somebody because they were trying to lower their view in the eyes of other people, you know. And so they were willing to talk about individuals. Proverbs 26:21 says, as charcoal is to burning coals, if fire to wood, so is a contentious man to kindle strife. That's why we talk about not being a talebearer and not being contentious. Not being a talebearer nor being contentious. Next, don't engage in insincere flattery. Matter of fact, I would say be careful about engaging even in sincere flattery. I'm not saying you don't complicate people. Don't compliment people. We all need to be telling people when they've done a good job and acknowledging their efforts and what they do, and especially parents to their children, you know, giving them, helping them with their personal esteem, where they feel they can be accomplishing things in life, as opposed to one man in the church who continually told his son he would never amount to anything. And you're looking at a self-fulfilling prophecy there if you do that all the time. Now, it's our responsibility to encourage our kids when they do something right to help build that confidence. And when they do something wrong, gently and lovingly correct it. But if all you do is correct and never compliment, you're going to have an issue. I'll tell a story of myself. I was pastoring in Lakeland, Florida at the time, and you know, our kids were small, Rick, Scott, and Michael. And they all had chores to do around the house because they were part of the family. And I remember my oldest son, Rick, was responsible for emptying all the trash cans, including the one in my office. That was his duty, his responsibility. And Scott had responsibilities, and Michael had responsibilities. And I remember seeing the trash can full of papers, and I couldn't get any more in it. And so it was brought to my attention, right? So Rick was walking. I said, Rick, come here. Aren't you supposed to be emptying the trash? Look at this trash. It's full. I can't get anything in it. You know what he said to me? He said, Dad, do you ever notice when the trash can is empty? Do you ever notice when I do empty it? And it made me sit back and take stock that, you know what? He did empty it. He did take care of his chores. But I only commented when he what? Didn't do it. And I always tried to make sure I complimented my sons a lot for what they did do so then I could tell them when they didn't do it. Okay, so I said, don't engage in insincere flattery. Proverbs 27 and verse 14. Proverbs 27 and verse 14. He who blesses his friend with a loud voice, rising early in the morning, it will be counted a curse to him. Again, realize you're not talking about honest, sincere compliments that we should be giving each other, our children, etc. But the point is, he rises early in the morning to do this, and he does it all day and all night. It's a continual type of thing. And pretty soon, somebody who's always complimented, the person being complimented begins to what? What is it this guy wants? You know, what is it he or she wants? Why all? So you begin to have this doubt in your mind about, and not only that, eventually, if he's doing it all the time in front of people, what happens to you? You begin to what? Be embarrassed. You begin to be embarrassed by it. It shall be a curse to him. Matthew Henry commentary says, it is great folly to be extravagant in praising even the best of our friends and benefactors. It is our duty to give everyone his due praise. That is true. To applaud those who excel in knowledge, virtue, and usefulness, and to acknowledge the kindness that we receive with thankfulness. But to do this with a loud voice, rising early in the morning, to be always harping on this string, in all companies, even to our friend's face, or so as that he may be sure to hear it, to do it studiously, as we do that which we rise early to do, to magnify the merits of our friend above measure and with hyperbole, is fulsome and nauseating, and savors of hypocrisy and design. That goes to the question, what is he wanting? What is he wanting? Now, I gave you a story, maybe it was a year ago in a sermon I had about, you know, a particular person, deacon to be exact. When I first arrived in the area, just, you know, I was the best pastor he ever had, and all his former pastors were not all that good. And that put a major question mark in my mind right there, because I said, there's going to come time, if there's a conflict, I'm going to become one of those not good pastors. Okay, and went on, and it continued to compliment, blah, 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 blah. 3 years later, we had an ordination, and he was not ordained. And it was amazing how his countenance and his attitude and his conversation changed towards me. So much so that in time, we had to bring the regional director in, our pastor in, to deal with the conflict. And you've all heard the story, I've already told it to you, but we're in my living room, and we let him go for or tell his story about why I'm such a horrible person. And then it was my turn. And I said, I only have one thing to say as far as why this conflict began, and it's my personal opinion, and that is, Mr. So-and-so, you wanted to be ordained so badly. And when you weren't, I became a bad person. He got up out of his chair, went into the kitchen, regional pastor sitting here, I'm sitting here, and we look at each other and go like this. And he's in the kitchen, we hear him just walking back and forth about 2 or 3, 4 minutes. He finally comes back into the living room, goes over to the regional pastor, puts his finger about an inch or two from his nose, leans forward and says, I have served God's people more than you and Frank McCready combined. This meeting is over. He walked out the door. Now, I did pray diligently that God would reveal what the issue was, the honest issue, so it could be resolved. And I think God did that. And anyway, it was very painful. It was very saddening. I really liked the person overall. But, you know, I told my wife, I said, this guy, you know, every Sabbath, you know, it's always something that I've done that's great, and, you know, how I've treated him better than anybody else, and, you know, and your suit looks good today, and your tie is great, and it was anything and everything under the sun. And so, like I say, that quote-unquote flattery began to just cause something in my mind to say something's just not right here. Something's just not right. And God revealed it for sure. So don't engage in insincere flattery, rising early in the morning. Yes, give good, honest compliments, especially to your children, but beware of that potential problem. Let's move on to the next category under the maintaining good friendships. And that is solving problems with our friends. Solving problems with our friends. And these will somewhat tie in with what we've covered, but from a different perspective. Solving problems with our friends. Number one, make sure you are at peace with God. Make sure you are at peace with your Maker. Turn to Proverbs 16:7. Excuse me. Proverbs 16:7 says, "When a man's ways pleases the Lord, he makes even his enemies to be at peace with him." Makes even his enemies to be at peace with him. Now, I'm not going to take you through a number of stories from the Bible, the Old Testament in particular, where God inspired peace to be made. For instance, Jacob and Esau. There's a place in Scripture where it says that God, you know, caused peace to come between Jacob and Esau. Now, that's awesome because Jacob kind of brought some of that stuff on himself, you know, Israel, by how he conducted himself with a little help from his mother. You see, God can turn foes into friends when he pleases. God can turn foes into friends when he pleases. And if your ways please him, he'll probably do that. He can make our enemies to be at peace with him. He can change their minds or even force them into feigned submission if necessary. God has that ability. They may not even know why they all of a sudden feel good about you, but they do. You see, that's what God can do. And he will do that for us when we please him. If we make it our care to be reconciled to God first and to keep ourselves in his love and in his good nature, he will have a tendency to incline those that have been envious towards us for whatever reason and help them to entertain good opinions and to become our friends instead of our enemies. Like I said, Esau and Jacob. Another one is Abimelech and Isaac, if you remember that story. And even David, if you read through the writings, even David's enemies eventually courted his favor and desired a league with Israel. I very firmly believe that was part of the Lord's doing. Number two, solving problems with our friends. Be slow to anger. Have you ever had a friend upset you? I have. Be slow to anger. Proverbs 15:18. A wrathful man stirs up strife, but he who is slow to anger allays contention. A wrathful man stirs up strife. Anger strikes the fire which sets cities and churches on fire. You see it all the time in the world, and unfortunately we've even had a few of that in our history. Set cities and churches into flame. Matthew Henry puts it this way: a wrathful man with his peevish passionate reflections stirs up strife, sets people together by the ears. He gives occasion to others to quarrel. He takes the occasion that others give through whatever trifling. When men carry their resentment too far, one quarrel still produces another. That kind of ties back into, you know, the water. You know, it widens and deepens the issue. Yet meekness, the great peacemaker, he that is slow to anger, not only prevents strife, that it be not kindled, it appeases it if it be already kindled, and brings water to the flame, unites those, again, that have fallen out, and by gentle methods brings them to mutual concession for peace's sake. That's basically what was being stated here in Proverbs 15:18. A wrathful man stirs up strife, but he who is slow to anger allays contentions. You know, we might say a man or woman who has self-control, who has God's Holy Spirit that gives them the fruits of the Spirit of love, joy, peace, long-suffering, gentleness, goodness, faith, meekness, and temperance. You know, someone who's always angry and contentious, you know, is God's Spirit really there? That's not my choice to make. That's God's. But I do ask the question. So be slow to anger. And the next, be slow to respond. Do you have a friend who, when he hears something from you, immediately takes off running with it? And he has all the answers to the right, to the left, up, down, everything, you know. He just hears a statement, and pretty soon he responds immediately, before even hearing the other side of the story. Slow to respond. Proverbs 18:13. He who answers a matter before he hears it, it is folly and shame to him. It is folly and shame to him. So you don't want to be that person. You want to be the person who maybe is slow to respond. It will help maintain your friendships. You see, men and women can expose themselves by the very thing which they hope to gain, and that is applause, by having an answer for everything. There are people who take great pride in being quick. You have individuals who, you start a statement, what do? They finish it. Because they know. You start a statement, and they finish it. They take pride in being quick. They answer a matter before they hear it. As a matter of fact, as soon as they put ear to it, they often answer. They've already appraised the situation immediately, and thereby have conclusions. However, the problem is when somebody else comes along and does what? Gives the other side of the story. Matthew Henry again: those that take pride in being quick commonly fall under the just reproach of being impertinent. It is a folly for a man to go about to speak to a thing which he does not understand, or to pass sentence upon a matter which he is not truly and fully informed of, and has not patience to make strict inquiry into it. If it be folly, it will be to his shame. So be slow to speak, lest you be put to shame, or you might say embarrassed. Now, if you remember, which I forgot to mention at the beginning, that when we started off with this sermon, we emphasized it was for all of us, but was directed more to our youth, that they can learn these things when they are younger. It can stand them in good stead as they progress through life. So be slow to respond. Now, the next two kind of go together. Number one, avoid quarreling. And number two, the two to go there, speak gently. Avoid quarreling and speak gently. These, again, all tie together, but they are maybe have a little bit of a nuance to them. Proverbs 20 and verse 3. Proverbs 20 in verse 3. Again, avoid quarreling and speak gently. Proverbs 20, verse 3 says, it is honorable for a man or a woman to stop striving. It says any fool can start a quarrel. That's put quite well. Any fool can start a quarrel. Matthew Henry puts it this way. Men think when they are engaged in quarrels that it would be a shame to them to back off. Once it starts, I'm going to finish it. I'm going to finish it. Whereas really it is an honor for a man to cease from strife. An honor to withdraw from action, to drop a controversy, to forgive an injury, to be friends with those that we have fallen out with. It is the honor of a man, a wise man, a man of spirit, to show the command he has of himself by ceasing from strife, yielding and stooping and receding from his just demands for his peace's sake. That's put quite well. Again, we're all, most of us, a little older in this audience. And if you think back over the years, you know of an individual who's just like that. When something starts, he's not going to back off. It's a prideful thing. Yeah, God says, back away. Just back away. You know, you may be correct. You might be right. It might be a situation. But I don't need to have my own honor or self-righteousness placated when it's just a conflict or situation between two people. I have found that even in the ministry, when I had members, especially when they first came in from outside or whatever, they wanted to argue with me about a particular position, especially on prophecy. And we, you know, I explained exactly what we believe. They, well, that's wrong. That's, well, we use these scriptures and we feel it's correct. I said, but it is prophecy. You know, prophecies fail. Yeah, but you're just incorrect. And I said, you know what, Fred, or Samantha, whomever. I said, I tell you what. When Jesus Christ returns, and if you're right, I accept it. More often than not, that stopped the conversation. You know, Christ returns, you know, we'll see. You know, because I knew we would just go back and forth and back and forth. And pretty soon you would end up in a heated discussion. Pretty soon you've got, what, anger, conflict developing. And as a pastor, I didn't want that. You know, the ministry is a ministry of reconciliation. And that's what we want. We want that peace. Doesn't mean that I agreed with the guy, but I wasn't going to get anywhere arguing with him, especially for pride's sake. Just let it go. And, you know, he wasn't causing any conflict in the congregation. He wasn't preaching heresy. He just had a strong conviction about a certain element of prophecy. And who knows? When Christ returns, maybe he will be right. You know, prophecy is very interesting. So avoid quarreling. Proverbs 20 and verse 3. And the next one is speak gently. It goes along with, instead of quarreling, how you ought to respond to somebody who may want to quarrel with you. Proverbs 15 and verse 1. How to solve problems with our friends or people in general. Proverbs 51 says, a soft answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. And I know I told you the story when we did our marriage workshops, and the first time we used the expression coming in out of the garage, and I saw my wife, you know, slamming cabinet doors and kicking the table and slamming chairs up. I saw anger, right? Now, I could have asked Sonia, what's wrong with you now? How do you think that would have gone over? Not real well, right? But if I took the soft answer approach as opposed to harsh words, said, sweetheart, I can see that you are upset about something. I have no idea what it is, but I want you to know that I'm here for you. If you want to discuss it, we can sit down. you know, or if you don't want to discuss it now, we can discuss it later. Whatever it is, you know, I just want you to know I'm here and I'm sorry that you're feeling this way. And normally what you would find with most people with that approach is you begin to see the anger do what? Begins to dissipate. Now, after I gave that example to get a point across in one of my presentations, the very first time I gave it, my wife came up afterwards and said, next time you give that, you make sure you see it's a hypothetical situation. And I have, you know, because I've given, we've done marriage workshops now probably about 30, 35 different congregations. But so I always use it, hypothetically speaking, so as to keep my wife from slimy chairs and doors with my fingers in it. So speak gently. Be willing to, you know, be an individual who wants to dispel a potentially tense situation by dissolving another person's wrath or anger or hurt. Bible Knowledge Commentary says this: being conciliatory in such a situation requires forethought, patience, self-control, and kindness. Virtue commonly lauded in Proverbs. A harsh word, by contrast, arouses anger. It doesn't dissolve anything. So Proverbs 15:1 basically saying is when men and women are provoked, speak gently to them. Give them a good word. And you'll find that they will often be pacified. Because you're concerned for the individual. And you'd like them not to have high blood pressure and not have ulcers and give themselves a heart attack. So nothing stirs up anger and sows discord like grievous words, calling foul names as raca and you fool. You know that's biblical, by the way. Next, number 6. I'm going to finish this one because I'm not giving a third one. Speak briefly. Speak briefly. Proverbs 10, verse 19. In the multitude of words, sin is not lacking. But he who restrains his lips is wise. So I'm not going to go into a lot of detail. That is also covered in some of the other points I covered earlier. But, you know, be willing to be careful by not being someone who just talks all the time. Next point is be quick to show love. Proverbs 10 and verse 12. We did cover this one earlier. Hatred stirs up strife, but love covers all sins. If you have a deep love for God, you're not going to be wanting to spread things out about your neighbor, okay? Or your friend saying something silly. So in conclusion, properly applying the wisdom of God found in His Word can assure that we enjoy the blessings of good friends in this life and can look forward to enjoying those dear friends in life eternal, in the very family and kingdom of God when it eventually arrives. Rather than depending on trial and error, learn how to win friends and influence people. And I'm not talking about Carnegie, okay? I'm talking about God's Word. Let God's Word be your God. Just remember, but of all friendships we could possibly develop, none can excel that one we have with Jesus Christ and our Father. Christ calls us what? You are my friend. If you weren't, I wouldn't have told you all the things I've told you. That goes back to the first sermon, how friends, close friends share with each other and develop a very close relationship. Remember the statement earlier? A friend can stick closer than a brother. Jesus Christ is our friend, and He will stick very close to us. So hopefully you become friends with Christ. We consider what he's done for us. But also, if you have some issues with maybe individuals, you might take some of these points we've discussed here and try to reconcile, ministry of reconciliation. Or your young people, if you can take these principles and apply them now and learn how to use them as you progress through life, you'll find that life will be so much better for you in the long run.